Going to read to you from Romans. We've been working our way through the book of Romans recently, and we're at the end of chapter 9, start of chapter 10. So I'm going to read to you Romans 9, verse 30 through to chapter 10, verse 4. So Romans 9, verse 30. What shall we say then? That Gentiles who did not pursue righteousness have attained it, that is, a righteousness that is by faith. But that Israel who pursued a law that would lead to righteousness did not succeed in reaching that law. Why? Because they did not pursue it by faith, but as if it were based on works. They had stumbled over the stumbling stone, as it is written, Behold, I am laying in Zion a stone of stumbling, a rock of offence, and whoever believes in him will not be put to shame. Brothers, my heart's desire and prayer to God for them is that they may be saved. For I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. For being ignorant of the righteousness of God, and seeking to establish their own, they did not submit to God's righteousness. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. Have you ever had this issue where someone is well-meaning, enthusiastic, but you need to point them in the right direction? There's a severe version of that that we might call fanaticism, a sort of uninformed, unbalanced zeal. And we have to be slightly careful before knocking this, because we live in a culture that doesn't like anyone that's keen, unless it's on a few prescribed issues, and then we can be very enthusiastic. People use words pejoratively, like fundamentalist. The history behind it is not a bad negative thing, but it's used that way now and confuses different kinds of people. But there is a kind that is not healthy, and the damage it does is mostly to the people who hold the view themselves. Sincerity is an excuse, because people can be sincerely wrong, and often are. And feeling strongly about it is, which is funny enough, having not dismissed people who are enthusiastic. Sometimes people go, well, I feel very strongly about this. And that's a card people can seem to lay down now, and everyone has to concede their arguments. It doesn't matter how strongly you feel about something if you're wrong. And we see something of that here in these verses. There's a misdirected zeal over an important issue. Now, what we've been looking at last few weeks is we've been going through Romans for a while. We've been going through Romans 9, and which isn't the easiest of the chapters, although not as hard as I thought it might be. The issue we've been looking at is God fair? Is he fair? That's an important issue. And can he be trusted? And the answer we've seen is yes, he can. And what raised that question for Paul when he originally wrote this was this issue about the Jews. And that seems quite distant to us in Chelmsford. How many Jews that go to church got to do with us any more than anyone else? The reason is for that issue is that as Paul's been explaining what this good news is and what this God's plan is, he takes us back hundreds of years before Jesus, and how this plan comes together over hundreds of years to Jesus Christ through the Old Testament, and these promises that God made to Israel and the Jewish people. And so people are asking Paul, well, hang on, where were all these Jews in church then? And if that's because God has not been faithful to his promises, then well, what about us? Is he going to be faithful to people like us? And so Paul has answered a series of questions related to that to show that God is trustworthy. But in answering those questions and the number of relevant issues around them, we've seen that actually there's a lot, as Esther said, to us. Sometimes independently of those questions, there's a lot of relevance for us. So going right back to the beginning, chapter 9, verses 1 to 5, he raises this issue about his heart for his people, the Jews. And that raises issues for us about our love and concern for the lost. Then there's this question, is God unfaithful? Verses 6 to 13. And the answer was no. He's kept his word to Israel, within Israel, the Israel by faith. Is God unjust? In verses 14 to 18. No, he had a purpose in election. And the rejection of God is down to the individual, not down to God. Salvation is a work of God. Is God unfair to blame us because of his irresistible will in verses 9 to 29? And the answer is no. He acts according to his good character, and we're not in a position to pass judgment over God. And now, 9:30, what shall we say then? And that's the sort of conclusion to this bit. And it's a summary of where Israel was at spiritually at the time. How did they get into this sorry state, or many of them into this sorry state? And four things Paul summarizes. That they pursued God not by faith but by works. That they stumbled on the stumbling stone. That they had zeal without knowledge. And that they'd missed the point. And all of these things are live wires for us. So they pursued God not by faith but by works in verses 30 to start of verse 32. So how did the Gentiles get there and the Jews didn't? Well, Paul actually says Gentiles, not the Gentiles. Sounds a bit overly subtle in English. It's significant in Greek. What it means is, if you don't use the definite article, if you don't use the, it means some. So some of these Gentiles, not all of them. And then that's qualified as the sentence goes on. So some Gentiles, specifically the believing ones, those with faith. So these Gentiles with no background preparation had various gods and spiritual ideas. None of them related to the Bible at all. They had a completely different way of seeing the world. Not only so, but they were ungodly. They had many, different according to which part of the Roman Empire you're looking at and the wider world, but living in horrific ways in how they treated each other. And this is, you pick this up in the New Testament, and if you read anything in the early church, it would have been very complex trying to unravel the issues as these people come to church. So imagine a church one Sunday and a family turn up, and you have a man there with a number of wives and a slave, and he'd been trading slaves all week, and say, can I come and join your church? And you'd have to unravel that. Where would you even start? And yet those kind of people have heard the good news and are coming to faith, convicted of their sin. They see the Saviour and their need for him. Now contrast that to Israel. Again, there's no the. So he's saying specifically unbelieving Israel, not every single Israelite. They didn't do that. And that may seem odd because in verse 31, it says they pursued the law. So they're not indifferent and wishy-washy. They were keen. It's not to say that every ethnic Jew was today or then. But you see, many of them were devoted to this law. They're pursuing the law. They care. And it's not a silly thing, because notice it says the law leads to righteousness. And yet their pursuit, they miss that. In fact, notice they don't miss the righteousness, they miss the law. Now, how so? Well, start at verse 32, because it was not by faith but by works. They pursued it based on their success of law keeping, not on the basis of faith. Now, often the way Christians unhelpfully explain the Bible is like this: is the Old Testament versus the New Testament. That the Old Testament is about works and law, and the New Testament is about faith and grace. Funny enough, sometimes it's works and law, and you're born into it, and faith and grace, and you're converted into it. Not so. Now, grace is the opposite of works, but grace is not the opposite to law. Law contains grace. Law contains gospel. The law is gracious because it reveals God's character, and it's the best way to live that brings blessing to the person doing it and those around them. And the law follows grace. It's always the case that you get grace first, then the law. So you keep on finding through the Old Testament, God says, I've saved you. Now, this is how to live. Not do this and then I'll save you. So even the doing is dependent on grace. So there's the first problem. Trying to do the law, trying to get a hold of righteousness, and therefore God, under their own steam, by works and not by faith. And of course, that's not a unique problem to the Jews, but to everyone, including, especially, churchy people. You cannot work to righteousness. You cannot be good enough to reach God. You need to receive his offer by faith. This has to happen by faith, not by works. And then we see they stumbled on the stumbling stone in the second half of verse 32 and verse 33. Now, what is the stumbling stone and how do they stumble on it? What Paul does here is he fuses two Old Testament verses together. He takes Isaiah 8:14 and Isaiah 28:16 and he sort of glues them together. Isaiah 8:14 is about God and calls him the sanctuary for those that fear him. But to Israel, both north and south at the time, they stumble over that through lack of faith. And then 28:16 is pointed to the promised Christ. To believe in him, you will not be put to shame. Thought about that this morning, looking at John. Or you will take offence. And Paul draws the two together and says these are both talking about Jesus Christ. He is very God, the shelter of those with faith. And he's the promised king. Trust in him, you will not be put to shame. Christ is the rock. And what happens when you come to a rock? Well, either you walk into the rock, you'll collide, and you come off worse. Or you stand on, and you are secure, and you build on him. And Paul's saying to those who've come to Christ, stand on him. You will be secure. You will not be put to shame. That's going to be the theme taken up with the rest of chapter 10. So those who come to Christ against him, well, they will collide, and there'll be one outcome. And why this collision? Well, verse 33, he's a stone of stumbling and a rock of offence. So we're used to thinking the gospel causes offence, specifically Jesus causes offence. Although Jesus is the point of the Old Testament. We thought about those couple of Thursdays with Stefan, and that's all on our YouTube channel. And what Stefan helpfully showed us was not just that the book talks about things that point to Jesus, but it talks about everyday life, so that even their diet and so on is pointing them towards Jesus in some way, and those changes talk of those things as well. And yet when it comes to it, they stumble over him, and they're offended by him, because Jesus offends our pride. Paul's just said they sought the righteousness that the law points to, but their own works, not by faith. And the law, in part, teaches what you can't do. And Jesus says you can't do it, so you have to come to me. And if we've got that understanding that I can do it, I can reach God, then this becomes very offensive, because it says, no, you're completely wrong, you can't. Now, years ago, last church that I worked at, I was asked by another church nearby to come and do a Christianity Explored course. And the reason why is the church ran a community project. And that was run by some people from that church and some other churches, and also people who weren't openly saying they didn't believe in any of this. So they wanted me to do Christianity Explored mostly for their benefit. And there was a couple of ladies there who absolutely loved it. One of them was from an Anglican church, one of them from a Pentecostal church. And the non-Christians there, well, they were quite intrigued by it and asked good questions. But from the church that invited me, they said, that's a very judgmental form of Christianity. Thought was interesting, so I asked them a few questions, like how do you think someone would go to heaven, or however you want to word it. And they answered without a beat of hesitation, by being good. In fact, they were also clear that not everyone goes to heaven, not bad people. They were not less judgmental, they were far more, because they were offended by the thought that we're all in the same boat. They found that deeply offensive. That they didn't need mercy and grace because they're the good people, and bad people shouldn't be given grace and mercy. They just, what they had done is the bar that I was talking about, they're taken very, very low, so that some of us can get over it. Nominal vague spirituality, if you're good, that is enough. And Jesus is a stone you bash into and stumble and offends. But the Jews of Paul's day were mostly not nominal. They were very serious. And there are, in many ways, Christians like that who have a commendable seriousness. They're rightly concerned about believing the right things and doing things the right way as God has revealed them to us to do. Great. So long as there's a sort of biblical generosity towards others, humility, I may be wrong on some of the details, and also, and especially, so easily they can fall into I did it right, therefore on that basis I come before God, or more than you do. The unbelieving Israel stumbled on the rock, and Paul's quoting, the fact Paul quotes Isaiah shows that's not a new problem, and for very religious people ever since, that problem's not gone away. Their other problem is they have zeal without knowledge. In chapter 10, verses 1 to 3. And we're not talking about vague liberalism here, are we? Because verse 2, it says, I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. They're enthusiastic, but ignorant. And that's a bad combination. Especially that they're ignorant about God's righteousness. They've established their own in its place. Now notice the problem. It's not they're missing God's grace. That is a problem addressed in other parts of the New Testament, but that's not the issue here. They are ignorant about his righteousness. Now grace often is the issue. So people think they can, and it is related, they think they can reach God by their own works, rather than needing God to come and reach down to them. Here, the problem is they're zealous for God, verse 2, but they're ignorant of his righteousness, and they establish their own, in verse 3. They have missed the extent of God's righteousness. So what they've done is they've missed the gap. That's why they don't get grace either. They've missed the gap. The gap between them and God. And the gap between God's perfect righteousness and our sort of patched together version. So they don't get the creator-creature distinction, and therefore they miss an awful lot of stuff. They miss grace and mercy and the extent of God's love, because they've made the gap between us and him very close together, and much more besides. So if they don't get God's righteousness, and therefore his requirements, they're not going to understand his standards, and they're going to think they're good enough. So the zeal is good, but it's in a bad direction. And what they were lacking was knowledge. Now, often modern Western Christianity, evangelical Christianity, scoffs at knowledge. We want sermons that are uplifting, that are practical. We want a Christianity that's experiential. And we might refer to Paul's words in 1 Corinthians that love builds up and knowledge puffs up. And by itself, it does. Knowledge detached is a bad thing. But it's not a case of either or, is it? What we're talking about here is the knowledge of God as revealed in the Bible, specifically his righteous character. Now, of course, there is a problem with Christians knowing stuff, reading books, knowing facts. What we're talking about here, though, is knowing knowledge of God, a personal, relational knowing. And that comes by the Spirit in his word. You might be helped by books. I've got a few behind me. This is because I don't know a load of stuff. I need help from other Christians, and it's not convenient to ring them all the time, and some of them are dead. So this is why I've got some of these to help me out with. They're just friends that help me understand the Bible better. They're better at it than me. But we're talking about the purpose of the knowledge is to love God and to channel as zeal. Not to get rid of zeal, but to point it in the right direction. So we should want to know more because we love God. And we want to love God because we know him. Once we know him, how can you do anything but love him? We want to know what we can. The devil doesn't care, by the way, if you can recite the order of the churches that Paul visits on his second missionary journey. Recite that to your heart's content. He'll be as happy as a sandboy. But know things about God that affects how you live that you're going to start applying. That makes you love him more. That's a different matter. Now, our culture, as I said, is very anti-enthusiasm about most things, especially religion. You start showing zeal for God, you go on a watch list. That's not the problem. Zeal is good, but it's not good if it's ignorant zeal. We need to grow in knowledge and channel it, and then we'll be enthusiastic in the right way. And generally, ignorant zeal works its way out as self-righteousness. And it comes in a variety of forms. It's interesting, it was just hysterical recently, I saw someone talk about that these particular kind of people, look how self-righteous they are. They're so mean and self-righteous, not like me, and not actually seeing how they do it. It comes across the board. And the way Paul draws that together at the end of this point is that he says they've missed the point. And we see that in chapter 10, verse 4. It says, for Christ is the end of the law, a righteousness to everyone who believes. Christ is the end of the law. Now, by that, it doesn't mean ceasing or stopping. It's not that Christ stops the law as such. He abolishes the law. Jesus is quite clear. He says, I've not come to abolish the law. Rather, he means here by end is a point or goal. So the Greek word is telos. I don't know if you've ever come across people talk about things having a teleological function and an end goal in mind. So someone talks about that something's telos and its purpose, its goal. Aristotle was the guy for that. Now, of course, once the law has achieved its end, Jesus, it has a dramatically different relationship to us between the believer and the law. And that's, you know, that was helpful what Stefan was talking about when we read some of these things and say, well, it's that how it applies now is very different. You know, like the food laws, we don't keep those food laws in that way. It's still in the Bible. We relate to it very differently because it's done its pointing job. Now, if the law points to Christ and they are zealous for the law, but they haven't come to Christ, they have missed the whole point of the exercise. It'd be like having a menu. I mean, I'm indecisive, so menus cause me a great dilemma. But, you know, it'd be like obsessing about a menu and not the food that comes to the table. The menu, the purpose of the menu is to choose the food. And so the law points to Christ. If they're obsessing about the law, but they don't come to Christ, they have entirely missed the point. So if they've been reading and meditating on the law, as the Psalms told them to, and to us to, then when Christ came, they should go, oh, that's what we've been doing. That's why we did the food laws and the sacrifices. That this all makes sense now. In fact, all the Bible in all its detail points to Christ. He is its point, its goal, its fulfillment, its end. Hence, the section ends, for righteousness to everyone who believes. By faith in Christ, it's fulfilled. The law's fulfilled its demands. And most Jews in Paul's day focused in on the detail. And that wasn't unimportant, but they didn't go wide angle. They need to do both, zoom in and out, the detail and Christ. But the detail serves us knowing Christ better. Again, there's a problem if as Christians we miss the end, we miss the point. It's good to be concerned to know our Bibles well and to live it out. And that the Bible impacts all of our life, as I was thinking about Japanese toilets, zombie films and bird watching. It concerns all of life, but because of Christ. Now, what Paul's done is he's answered those questions of chapter 9. Is God trustworthy? Can we trust God if there are only a few Jews to be saved? And we've got a resounding yes at every point. And now we've got this summary. If there's only a few Jews, it's because they tried not by faith, but by works. They stumbled on the rock. Their zeal was ignorant, and they'd missed the point, which is Christ, who's the end of the law. So yes, God is trustworthy, but also all those issues are live wires today in some way or another for us. For the regular Christian, again and again, we need to come back to these points. Actually, they are remarkably like the five solas, aren't they? Not by works, but by grace through faith. To not stumble on the rock, the offence of in Christ alone and not by works. The zeal was ignorant, our need for knowledge from Scripture alone. And they'd missed the point, which is Christ as the end. Glory, God's glory alone. So the whole problem is about missing Christ, the extent of who he is and what he did. And so having a too high a view of ourself and too low a view of the task of establishing righteousness, we can't establish our own righteousness. We need his righteousness. God is just and he's trustworthy. So then trust in him and his son and stand on the rock and grow towards Christ.